Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book. A romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8. Sunshine 106.8.
Welcome to A Taste of Ireland. I'm Ed Finn, and we are coming to you this evening from the prestigious Merchant Hotel overlooking the Cathedral Quarter here in Belfast. My special guest this evening is Mr. Bill Wolseley. Bill was born in Belfast in the early 50s. He went straight from school to Arsenal on an apprenticeship. And today his company, Bannacore, is one of the largest independent owner-operators of hotels, bars, pubs, restaurants and nightclubs in Ireland. Bill, you're very welcome to the programme.
And you're welcome to The Merchant.
We're going to talk a little bit later about the history here, of course, of The Merchant. It was one of, globally now, a hotel of note, if you like. Bill, just if you could tell us a little bit about your early beginnings and growing up here, I suppose, in Belfast in the 50s and 60s.
My upbringing was unusual because, I mean, I don't come from a moneyed family, so I come from, you know, a hard working class area of Belfast, Ballysillan, which is a Protestant estate in Belfast. But my mother and father were both really old school socialists. So the background was different from others in the area. My mother, for instance, didn't even believe in nationalities. She believed we all lived in one world and we should look after each other. And my father belonged and worked for the Transport and General Workers Union. He boxed for Ireland. He played football at a high level. And as a kid growing up, you know, we'd always hear my mother and father talking about politics. And my father always gave me the advice, even though I was only, you know, 9 or 10 years of age, never ever vote for anyone who waves a flag at you. So it was a sort of unusual, very loving background, a happy childhood, probably normal as much as all the people who lived for the most part of my childhood, because there was no work in Belfast. My dad, you know, for a considerable part of my childhood, lived in England and sent the money home, as so many families did, not only in Belfast, but in Ireland.
And then you went off to Arsenal from straight from school on an apprenticeship.
Yeah, I went straight from school. I was nearly 15, 14. Went over and signed for Arsenal.
I mean, you cut your teeth here then in terms of hospitality. Very lovely story about your parents giving you £8,000. Mm-hmm. A lot of money then, maybe. And you opened your first bar in Bangor. Now, that must have been serious pressure, was it?
It was. What happened is with the whole family would all move to England, and I had actually taken on an apprenticeship in printing. I became a compositor. And it was a rerun of my school days. I hated the apprenticeship as much as I hated my school days. But I went to night school and got involved in the hospitality and loved it. You know, an epiphany took place within me. And I loved the hospitality business. And I was able to get a job where if I hit over a certain figure, I got to keep some of the profits. And I was able to make about £4,000 myself. This, you know, seems little now, but a lot then. And on the back of that, my mum and dad lent me their life savings, which was, you know, such a huge thing to do with someone who was 22 years of age and looked about 12. And I was able to buy a pub that had been for sale for 150,000 and dropped down to 50. So I was clever enough to spot a bargain, but too silly to ask why the price had dropped. So what actually happened was, let's just call them the boys, had taken over the pub. So we had Stiff Little Fingers, the band playing upstairs, the punk band, and people who would chop your fingers off downstairs. So it was a sort of nightmare 2 years where we turned the pub around, you know, established a really good, solid working class trade and made a success of the pub. But it was huge pressure in very, very, very difficult times. But every penny of my parents' money was ran, my money were wrapped up in that pub.
Was it very difficult in terms of trying to run a business then? I know people have told me that things were very hard. I mean, I know you were stabbed at one stage.
Yeah.
You were always very good in terms of giving money back to the community. How did you manage to make it all work?
From the very start, we were told by the police special branch, you had to bar this person or that person. He belonged to this organisation or that organisation. And we decided to ignore all that advice and bar people for our own rules. And that sounds simple now, but was difficult then because you couldn't actually call the police out to help you. That would have been, you know, put you in a serious position. So we established a bar that not only we ran it well, but we put money back into local boxing clubs, football clubs. There was an elderly lady was robbed and we ran a fundraiser for her. So we immersed ourselves totally within the community. And the paramilitaries also come from that community. And the community sort of said, look, these people aren't too bad, maybe a bit unusual, but, you know, they're putting something back. And we, you know, we employed people from that community. And eventually, you know, the boys let us run an efficient and good pub that was welcoming to all. And I mean, yeah, everybody we welcomed. We never considered the religion of anybody. And the pub became, you know, really thrived in a very difficult time.
I know that you're a good believer that there's good in everybody, you know, and I suppose that is something that a lot of people, when they come from disadvantaged areas, it can be very difficult. And when you don't get such a good start in life, it's obviously hugely difficult as well. So I think it's interesting how, you know, you can bring people along with you when you sort of, you know, recognise that there's good in everyone.
I mean, if you look at the politics within Northern Ireland, I'm proud to come from Northern Ireland. I'm really proud of the people from Northern Ireland. The vast majority of people here are liberal-minded, want to put out the hand of friendship to all. And we sometimes are dreadfully represented by our politicians. But some of the best people I know here, it's easy to be liberal if you live in Islington or South Dublin. You know, that where the most difficult thing you'll have is a croissant lobbed at you. Here,
not so sure about that these days.
Well, here I know people have been put to the test and are determined to build a better future for all within this province. What an opportunity for us to show to people from the Republic who have been reticent to come up here that this is a place worth visiting and, you know, we're not as mad as portrayed.
And we love a bit of madness anyway. But what I love here, just to talk a little bit about where we are now today, right? You created this unique, right, beautiful building. Now, this was a bank that stood empty for years.
Yeah.
And you had a bit of a vision. People told you, oh, no, Belfast isn't ready for this. But you had a vision.
The building, you know, we're in the building. It's a pretty amazing piece of high Victorian architecture. And at that time, if you can remember back to those days when property men were king, and in fact, everybody was a property developer, they didn't want this building because it was a grade one listed. But I looked around it along with our team and we thought, wow, what a building. Somebody has designed this as a bank, but really knew one day it'd be converted to a hotel because it converted so beautifully and so easily. So we thought there is another five-star hotel here. You know, it's a very, very good hotel. But we thought there was room for something that was, you know, a little bit more modern on the five-star. We thought there was a gap for a particular age group that weren't being catered for. And we bought the building. We were essentially publicans and restaurateurs. We didn't know much about the hotel business. But what we did know about was service. And I think Belfast is no different than the whole of Ireland. We're a really friendly people, but we intend, you know, can be sloppy in our service. And we get away with it by telling the joke. Here we were determined to have expert service, professional service in a building that was, you know, amazing looking. And we really lifted our sights and visited some of the best five-star hotels in the world, from Paris to New York to London, and we pitched ourselves against them. We didn't have an inferiority complex. Inside 2 years, we had won the UK and Ireland Hotel of the Year, which had never come to Ireland, as in the 32 counties. So we're very proud of what the team has achieved here. And we're now going 12 years, and so many of the people we started off are still with us. And I am very proud of that.
For me, I remember coming up a few years after you opened, and two things. I was blown away by, I stayed here and the breakfast room is resplendent. It's just, it's absolutely beautiful. And the cocktail bar is just a joy. I mean, I was having the best time, but, and I actually went for lunch then, my first time going to Ox, and I've been coming up for both since, but it's just, it is unique here. And it's, this hotel, I've traveled all over the world, luckily with my job. This really stands up there with the greats. I think it's an amazing achievement.
I'm pleased you say that, because the vast majority of people come here are, always comment on the service, but look at the decor, and, you know, you can see people with their mouths open as they come in. And we have afternoon teas here, and we have grandmothers bring granddaughters and granddaughters bring grandmothers. And it's while it is a five-star hotel, we've done our damnedest to make it the sort of place that is welcoming. And really, you know, the clue is in the name, hospitality. And we work hard, not only on the Merchant Hotel five star, we have another hotel, Bullet, and we own pubs around here, and we have pizza restaurants. We try to put that degree of service into everything we do.
Bill, that brings us along to your first choice of music. What have you picked for us this evening?
I've picked High by The Cure. It's a song I love. And, you know, the words are just so clever. Yeah, you know, this bloke is a poet, and every time I hear it, it makes me smile.
A Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book, a romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com.
On Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine. 106.8 Sunshine. 106.8.
You're very welcome back to A Taste of Ireland. My special guest this evening is Bill Wolseley, and we're coming here from the lovely setting of the Merchant Hotel in Belfast. Bill, if I could talk to you about the Benacor Group, you now have over 40 hotels and pubs under your belt and growing. People would be very interested, I think, to hear the model for the success that you've grown this business to.
Yeah, I get asked that question a lot. And the answer is we don't have a model. And we don't have a system. And I don't have a five-year plan or a three-year plan. But what we have and what we do is we look at a business, whether it's pizza restaurants, five-star hotels, four-star hotels, pubs, and we think, is there an opportunity for us to do something better, to give the customer a better product with a better service than the market's presently putting forward? And when we see a gap in the market, then we enter into it. So where we are, five-star hotel, we thought absolutely, you know, there was a gap missing. There was a gap that we could fill. The pubs around here, whether they're traditional pubs or pubs based on music, we go for those if we think there's a gap in the market. So that's the way we run. Like Little Wing for the pizza, we looked at what was going on there, and it appeared to us that there was three types of pizza restaurants. There was your Domino's takeaway, lots of syrups and salts and sugars. There was the person who got redundancies and called their pizza restaurant Scarface, and, you know, good luck to them. It's great pizzas. And then there was in the middle, I think it's Milano's in the Republic, Pizza Express here. And we thought we can compete head on with those people by making our own pizza bases, getting our own sauces developed, having traceable toppings, and having a project where we put back into the community, having like a little neighbourhood restaurant. So that's why we entered that market. So we consider where we've to go, but we don't have grand plans. And then when one's successful, we expand on it.
And is it a lot? I mean, is it a lot of trial and error? I mean, would there be a lot of things that you'd say, oh, we're going to do this, or we're going to develop this, and then you sort of halfway through you think, I'm not sure if this is going to work,
well,
or is it your gut?
Yeah, a lot of it, you're right, and a lot of it is gut instinct. And there's Napoleon said that his best generals were the ones who changed the battle plan in our end of the battle. And we have had to do that because we've cocked things up and gone completely in the wrong direction. But by and large, we really think through what we're going to open, what people it's aimed for, how we can get the product right. And, you know, if you build it right and get it right, usually the people come.
Yeah, I stayed in the Bullet a few weeks ago, and a great name to call a hotel in Belfast.
Yeah, yeah. Well, yeah, it's after the Steve McQueen movie, but
and I mean the model there of that, of course, it's a very different model, isn't it? It's a very different. I mean, it's very obviously a younger kind of demographic, very vibey. Food was terrific in the restaurant. Again, you know, you seem to have just kind of hit the nail on the head.
Yeah.
Belfast, of course, one of Europe's youngest cities.
Yeah, a younger city, one of the youngest cities in Europe, one of the best educated in Europe. So we know if we got it right, that people would get it, and we knew there would be opportunity to expand. So it's aimed at a, you know, sort of 25 to 40 would be, but we get right on up, and then we get much younger people like yourself.
Thank you.
There, but
young at heart.
Young at heart. So we have, you know, dinky rooms, comfy rooms, you know, rooms you can't swing a cat in, that sort of vibe, and a buzzing restaurant downstairs.
I notice when you talk, you're very generous. You use the word we a lot. I mean, in your business, I mean, I suppose building a team around you, a lot of people would say it's very important. It really is very important, isn't
it? Yeah.
And you use the word we a lot, I notice. Yeah,
it's the most important thing. Now, my particular business had a lot of my family members in it, but we have a team of about nine, five directors, and then another four senior managers. And depending on which business it is, there will always be a group of four or five who evaluate that. So it's completely a team effort. And that runs the whole way through the business. You know, it's always a way. You start off with a restaurant manager, and then there's someone below him, and, you know, they've got to work out the team, and we make every business, every department stands alone, and every manager has to make sure that they get the best out of their staff.
Yeah, I heard you saying before that you weren't a huge fan of board meetings, and you have your own unique management style, I guess, do you?
Well, yeah, I mean, increasingly, I don't feel like a dinosaur, but you know, I keep getting told we can't do those sort of things anymore by the other board meeting or other board members. But I really like a personal, I touch. I like looking. I don't like emails. I don't have an email. I don't like texts. You know, I like seeing people, meeting people on a face to face. That's the way I like to do all my business.
Yeah, and obviously it works very well for you. Why do you think, Bill? I mean, obviously it's been notorious for people, startups, the restaurant business, you know, I mean, massive rate of failure.
Yeah.
I mean, what kind of advice would you give to somebody if they were saying to you, you know, they start young. I know a lot of the chefs these days, if we're young and stuff, maybe they don't have so much experience, but there's a huge rate of percentage of failure for restaurants that open up and close pretty quickly.
Yeah. I mean, in Belfast, apart from the places we run, if you go to maybe five or six of the best restaurants, they've all worked with us because we really train on the business side. You know, we make people understand how you need to make a profit, and profit is the only way that you can move forward. I think what happens in hospitality, not only in Belfast, in general, I have never yet walked into a solicitor's office or a bookstore and think, I want to open a solicitor's and I want to open a bookstore. But we get well-intentioned amateurs come into our business. They are a celebrity chef to their friends, and they probably are, you know, very good chefs. And then they come into our business with a romanticised view of what would work. And they tend to all follow the same pattern. In year one, they are like the rest of us who've been in the business a long time. Hospitality is what we're all about. So really giving the customer the best is what drives us. You know, if that doesn't drive you, why get into this business? But amateurs get into it and they do that. And year two, they realise that they haven't charged enough. And they start to put up prices, or they start to operate with cash, which is always the road to nowhere. And by year three, they're gone. It's sad, but it's true. Ours is a business that needs you to be ever more professional. And once that gets recognised, usually those people who have trained understand about wage percentage and gross profit, all the boring stuff, which is absolutely essential. And then they go out and supply a meal or a drink to customers. It's a really rewarding business to be in, but failure comes around because people are well-intentioned, but amateurish.
We've obviously been through an unprecedented time in terms of, I know you've been through recessions in your life and we've seen them come and go, but this has been quite unprecedented, this whole COVID. Now, you must be delighted to be back and open again. I mean, were you going crazy during the lockdown, or how did you busy yourself?
We started off, we emptied all our fridges and freezers and we gave every bit of food we had to food banks. That was our start. But then to occupy our time, we started off doing, most of the directors did a bit of charity work, and then that doesn't fill your day. So I started off, I did a bit of gardening, and then I did more gardening, and then I discovered I absolutely hate gardening. as fast as you cut the bloody grass, it's up again. And then I went on to sort of doing bits and bobs around the house. I decided I wasn't a DIY person, so I filled my day, and I thought I'd learn French, and I thought I'd do all those. I did nothing.
We all identify with that.
I watched morning television, and whenever there was work required to do, you know, something to do with the business, I was delighted that I actually felt that I'd, you know, earned a crust that day.
A lot of people as well, I think, found it, I mean, languishing was one word that people use, but I mean, you yourself, you look very fit, very healthy. I guess when you're somebody who loves work like that, it's just the weirdest experience.
It was completely weird, because I also, you know, what I do is I play five-a-side football 3 times a week, and that was all stopped. So, you know,
Arsenal don't know what they missed.
So not only was I not able to do my work, I wasn't able to, you know, keep fit. I tried running. I tried all. I failed at absolutely everything that I thought I could do. I realised 2 things, that I need work. I don't think I'll ever retire. And I don't have the discipline to do things by myself. I just don't.
A lot of people, Bill, will identify with that as well.
Well, yeah. I would really love to tell you I did something clever, but...
Yeah, you weren't up baking sourdough bread in the morning.
No, like. No.
Very good to hear.
No.
Wonderful, Bill. That brings us along to your second choice of music. What have you picked for us this evening?
I've picked a song by John Martin called Spencer the Rover. And he wrote this quite a few years ago. And again, if you listen to the words... He, you know, there's a reference to this person as obviously having mental problems. And John Martin was a real tortured soul who died a sad death, but was a genius on the music front. So Spencer the Rover.
A Taste of Ireland with Ireland's Blue Book, a romantic collection of Irish country house hotels, manor houses, castles and restaurants. Ireland'sBlueBook.com
on Dublin's easy place to relax.
Sunshine 106.8 Sunshine
106.8.
And you're very welcome back to A Taste of Ireland, coming to you this evening from the lovely Merchant Hotel here in Belfast. And I'm with Bill Woodsley. Bill, having a very nice chat with you this evening. Now, you are branching out, and I see that you've got permission to build a hotel down in Dublin.
It's a 96-bedroom hotel in Capel Street in Dublin, and it's sort of three buildings. It used to be the old Boland's Bakery. It's been closed for quite some time. There's a laneway that actually runs from Capel Street out the back towards where the fruit and veg market is, and it's our intention to open that up, renovate absolutely amazing buildings, and put a bullet hotel in.
Was Dublin always going to be an inevitable place for you to go?
Yeah. We have expanded, I think, to the limits that we can in Northern Ireland, and it was either hop across to England or go down to Dublin, and the whole team are keen to get into Dublin. And we were brought this site about nearly 4 years ago, and somebody who knew our business inside out, and the moment we saw it, we loved it. It's the most exciting thing I've ever tackled. You're sitting in a magnificent, high art Victorian building. This goes back, bits of it goes back to 13th, 14th century, right through to Georgian, Victorian buildings. It's stunning building. And it'll cost a lot for us to restore it. We appreciate that much more were we to build on a greenfield site, but it'll be truly an addition to our portfolio. But we think we love the whole Capel Street side of Dublin, and we think it'll add to that. We were advised by so many people, and I think it's just a Dublin thing, you know, that never ever go north of the river. But we love it, absolutely love it.
Well, that is rubbish. As a Northsider myself, right, I blow in from Cork, but I mean, the Northside is a fantastic part of Dublin, the salt of the earth and the heart and soul, really, in a way, of the city.
Yeah, and even in the 3 years we've been there on Capel Street and behind Capel Street, there's little artisan pottery shops have opened, cake shops have opened. There's a fantastic pub that sells the most amazing cocktails just opened by us. There's a Salty of the Earth pub beside us. We absolutely love the street. It's buzzing. There's Korean restaurants. You know, I don't want to talk down Temple Bar, but Temple Bar, to me, reminds me of what an American would think Ireland's like. Capel Street is living, breathing area that people who have been there for considerable amount of time are really proud of. And behind us, they're going to develop the fruit and veg market, which is a absolutely stunning building. So, you know, we're really excited about the whole project.
It's going to become the new hub. I mean, what you were saying about Temple Bar, certainly, I mean, you know, I think most Irish people, if we were honest, would avoid it like the plague at St. Patrick's Day or anything like that, because it is, of course, a very tourist thing. But I think for people that want to really experience what you're talking about, the emerging new hub and heartbeat of Dublin, that is definitely the area, I think. I think you're spot on there.
Yeah, and one of the things, I mean, Dublin's a considerably bigger city than Belfast. But if you go to any city, I mean, you can talk about London, and people know Shoreditch, where there's lots of clever little shops run by, you know, the butcher, the baker, the candlestick maker. They make all the produce in it, and clever little restaurants. And it's an area you can walk and stroll around. There are great pubs in Dublin, great hotels in Dublin, but they're disparate. There is no actual area that has a concentration of artisans, for want of a better word. And we're hoping that Capel Streets will continue to emerge in that direction.
Brilliant. And what kind of timeline are you looking at, Phil, for this?
It'll probably be about 2.5 years from, you know, and we hope to start in the next 6 months, and it'll probably be a 2-year build. You know, this building was in needed a lot of repair. Right opposite is the Dirty Onion, a bar we run, that it had been closed for sort of 70 years. We did a full restoration on that. The National, which was a bank that had suffered dreadfully in the Troubles, we restored that totally. And similarly, it'll take time and it'll be expensive, the restoration that we're going to do in Capel Street. But I think at the end of the day, it'll be something we and in turn the citizens of Dublin will be really proud of.
Yeah, well, listen, it's great to hear that, and it's lovely to hear that's really exciting and development and wonderful that you're regenerating that area. If I could just take you on, Bill, to you're involved a lot in charity work, and you've done some great work there with Start 360 and My Aware. You're a great believer in giving back, and I know I've heard you say before that to be successful in business, you know, it's not all about money and it's about giving back. And I mean, I think you're very much into that whole philosophy, aren't you?
Well, and I think it comes right from my mother and father. They absolutely put, my father fixed machines, my mother worked in offices, but they worked on a charity front as well. And that is something that I think's deeply entrenched within our company. So not only I, but all the other directors and people who work for me put back. So I'm involved heavily in Start 360, which is taking kids who have had a disadvantaged start and have, you know, got into a prison and given them a chance to come back. And we also work with some of the most disadvantaged schools. We have an apprenticeship scheme where we start 6 kids a year. And we also had a scheme with the prisons where we take, you know, the 3 month when prisoners are on release, we would take them into our individual businesses. And the truth is, I get as much out of this as the people we're helping. And so does, I think anybody who gets involved in this will understand what I'm saying. You know, I really makes me feel better about myself.
That's a great philosophy. Now, I know I was saying earlier you're the epitome of health here. You look very good to me. You were diagnosed with you can pronounce this better than me, Bill.
Myasthenia gravis.
Yeah. So, and I mean, this has been sort of a life changing.
Yeah, I had that when I played football, you know, right in the early days. And I noticed I was getting a weakness in my leg. I thought it was my imagination, kicking the ball. And then I started to get double vision. And subsequent, my whole football career stopped. And it took them 4 years to diagnose that I had this illness, which is to do with the central nervous system. I ended up had 9 eye operations, which were completely unnecessary. That was a mistake. And I gradually got worse. When I was in my 50s, my weight dropped below 9 stone because I couldn't swallow. And then I was put on a new drug, turned my whole life around. And I'm still on that drug today. And this athlete you see in front of you is completely drug induced, but I feel great. And while myasthenia, you know, stopped my football career, so people listening out there who may have these illnesses, I certainly don't regard it as my friend, but it put me in a totally different direction. So sometimes in life, you know, turns that you feel are not good for you, sometimes you can turn those things around.
And Bill, I was going to ask you finally when we're finishing up, in terms of Northern Ireland, you're a man here on the ground for years and years and years. What do you think the future is here?
That is such a difficult question.
An easy one to end up with,
yeah,
Bill.
which we've just, you know, we've just left the EU, and that is causing us all the border problems that were predicted. I was a member of the Remain board, so I heavily wanted us to remain part of the EU. But this problem that we have at the moment, I think we will overcome it and we can turn it to our advantage, staying within the EU for trade and having seamless trade with the UK could be beneficial to Northern Ireland. But what I sense is that the people of this province are absolutely fed up with orange and green politics. We have absolutely had enough of it. And it's being shown in so many different ways. There are a lot of young people who don't vote. There are a lot of people who are changing their voting policy and voting for much more liberal and socially progressive policies. And I'm hoping that the politicians who are dragging behind where the people are will recognise that, and going forward we'll have a completely inclusive society that looks after what's really important for the people of this province, and that's their health, jobs for our children, and peace. And that's what I'm hoping will be here for the foreseeable future.
So from 1 to 10, what do you think?
Listen, I've lived in Northern Ireland for most of my life. I'm optimistic. I'm at an 8.
Well, very good, very good. Well, that's great to hear. We're going to take your final piece of music now, Bill, in a sec. But I just want to say that it has been an absolute pleasure to talk to you, pleasure to meet you. I've learned a lot from our chat this evening, and well worth the trip up to Belfast to sit here in your company and to sit in this beautiful creation that you've made, the Merchant Hotel. And if anybody wants a good afternoon tea, guys, if you want to treat yourself, you know where to come.
Well, it's been a pleasure talking to a Cork man who lives in North Dublin and travels regularly to Belfast.
Absolutely. With the Hollywood County Down grandfather.
Fantastic.
Bill, thanks a million. So, Bill, what have you chosen for your final piece of music this evening?
Right, my final choice is the very first record I ever bought, a 45, if you can remember back to those days. And it's by a band called America, and it's The Tin Man.